is Samantha Gladys Cochran, UMass, right?
That's me, UMass, yes.
It's all you.
All right. So good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Sam Cochran, and I'm working on trying to increase both the sustainability as well as the whole system yields in our corn silage production systems in Massachusetts. These are for our dairy farmers. They currently are producing full-season corn silage as the primary source of feed. This is about 110 days plus to harvest. This goes onto the field in late May to early June, starts to come off around September 10th, and that'll go on into mid-October. So in terms of cover crops, our farmers do take advantage of the aerial rye seeding programs that's subsidized by the NRCS. They like this because it's fairly easy and inexpensive. We also do have a manure ban in the state currently after September 15th. So it's nice as they can pull off their corn. They already have an established 30% vegetative cover as required by the regulation, and they can still go ahead and spread their manure. So why do we want to tinker with this system, right? We are producing silage and we have a lot of farmers cover cropping. Well, there's a few reasons here. One is the question of long-term availability. NRCS did lose funding on this for several years for the helicopters. It has been reinstated. So we want to have a plan B for our farmers to strike while the iron is hot for growers that are interested in continuing to cover crop. We also have a lot of growers who haven't bought in, so to speak. So even when it is fairly easy and inexpensive, we have people not taking advantage of this program. So in 2006, we saw that 17% of our growers were planting cover crops on time. So one, this is an older study. We're working on updating it next summer. But we do know from our extension work, we have quite a bit of room to improve on this number. And by on time, I'm referring to this figure here. We have five distinct growing zones in Massachusetts. And this hash-marked box here is the corn growing season for that full-season corn. The light gray box here is the cover crop growing season that we recommend for good fall establishment, biomass production, as well as winter survivability. So when you start to plant late because you have corn still on the field, you see reduction in all of these ecosystem services, but also particularly in nitrogen capture from that fall-applied manure. The difference of only 1 week here in planting time is the difference of about 80 kilograms per hectare of recovered nitrogen to about 60 kilograms per hectare of recovered nitrogen. So a little bit of time makes a big difference in our system. So some of the reasons that we've seen growers not want to get into these high carbon nitrogen crops is the concern of nitrogen tie-up in the subsequent cash crop production due to that high biomass and that high carbon. There's also a lot of residue management to deal with in the springtime, and there's concerns about establishment. So we're asking growers to do a lot of work for something that they don't necessarily see as a perceived or tangible benefit. So I realize that I'm not in the cover crop section, and that's the point. We want to stop having the conversation about these as cover crops and start talking about them as cash crops. And in some regions and production systems, we do see dual-purpose cover cropping and double cropping system. But for our growing season and our tight system, we're just not seeing that actualize yet. So the idea is that we can plant a short or mid-season corn variety. We're talking about 85 days to 100 now. That allows you to pull that corn off your field in time, or early September. Then you can go ahead and still apply your manure, disc it in, plant your cover crop. Now you have something that's a cash crop that you can graze in the spring, graze in the fall. Most of our growers are interested in harvesting this for baleage or otherwise and siling it in the springtime. So again, this is not something that we currently see happening. This is novel for our growers. But this opens up a whole new conversation that we can have where there's now an economic incentive and we're talking about managing a cash crop, not trying to manage a cover crop. So even with the slight yield penalty that can be associated with a shorter season corn hybrid, when you go out and now you're harvesting your cover crop, on top of that, the idea is that we see a whole system's yield increase compared to full season corn alone, and we're still getting all of these cover crop benefits. We also think that we're going to improve nutrient cycling. We don't want to keep turning nitrogen and phosphorus into our soils. We have very high levels of phosphorus from a newer application, and we see a lot of nitrogen leaching. We want to harvest this off of the field and get it moving on the farm again. We also now have less residue management. We're mowing to about 4 inches, so you have less to deal with, and in theory, less associated risk with that subsequent crop. So the reason we really have to make changes to our crop planting in the fall is this is aerial rye seeding. You're never going to be able to go out and harvest that. This is our crop, this is rye that we drilled on September 1st. This now is a whole different conversation of something we can harvest. So this is how it looks in late April, a few weeks before harvest. So we have a random block design, 4 applications per year for 3 years. and we're drilling at 123 kilograms per hectare, forage varieties of rye, wheat, and triticale kale, and these are going on September 1st. I do want to add the disclaimer that this is really our Cadillac plan. We have a sister experiment where we find that we can plant up to the 15th and we're still in great shape. After the 15th, yields really drop down. So we are working on more of a Buick model, but today we're going to focus on this sort of ideal system. So we do go ahead and spread manure at 75,000 liters per hectare. We disc that in before we plant our cover crops. And then in the spring, we do come in and apply either 0, 28, or 56 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen under the pretense, if we're going to call it a cash crop, let's look at fertilizing it like one. So when we get into the biomass production for this part, we see that we are at, with zero nitrogen application, we're at 2.5 megagrams of dry matter production per hectare. Species has no significant effect, at least in our study. There are a number of extension studies out there that have found a significant effect on yield production by species. At least with these cultivars in our system, we are not seeing that. It's a nitrogen-driven response. I think that's absolutely an avenue for more work to come, particularly in our region. We see at 28 kilograms per hectare, we're in good shape, 3 megagrams of dry matter per hectare. So these are nice numbers. It turned out that the cover crop to cash crop part was the easy part of this project, except for in 2015. It was a learning year. So I harvested the cover crop, cash crop, too late, and it was at the early heading stage, and this was really reflected in our feed value. We saw an average of a relative feed value of 100, which isn't terrible, but it's certainly not where we want to be in this system. I just let it get away from me. The other mistake is that we disced this twice, and the very next day we came in and we planted. So there was way too much biomass in the field. We did not get good seed-to-soil contact, and this was reflected in our population. So you can see rye and wheat are producing about 15,000 less plants per hectare than our control plots. So we didn't even take yield this year. We knew we really needed to work out this part of the system before we could move on. So in 2016, we were really on top of it, harvested on May 4th. We were at flag leaf stage. I have not yet run relative feed value, but I'm fairly confident that it's going to be much better since we actually harvested on time. And then the big difference this year is we planted with a no-till planter on May 12th. So we did band at startup nitrogen at a rate of 45 kilograms per hectare, and then we came in and we sprayed down the remaining crop on May 23rd. I think next year we can tweak this even farther. I think we'd be better suited to spray down the crop first, give it a few weeks, then come in and plant corn. We have enough time in this system to be able to go ahead and do that. What happened is we saw that rye, wheat, and triticale grow back several inches, and that sucked up a lot of the startup fertilizer in the system. So I still think we can make this work better. Regardless, we did side dress at PSNT, 45 kilograms per hectare. There were no significant differences in PSNT. It was all less than 10 parts per million. And then here's the point. We had no effect on population in this year. So that was fantastic to see that we solved this problem. The control plots were the same as the plots that previously had a cover crop, cash crop on them. So I thought we were in business to confirm our hypothesis this year until I got to the yield. And we see that whether there's rye, wheat, or triticale, it's not even really about species in this case. It's about there was just a crop there, period. We're seeing a 25% reduction in silage yield. And I was absolutely surprised by this, and I'm pretty sick to my stomach about it, too. If you look in the literature, there's a number of studies over multiple locations and multiple years that show no impact of a rye cover crop on silage production, grain production, or soybean production. So even with a slight yield penalty, I never expected it to be this drastic. So here's our hypothesis, and at least for this year, we're going to put that on the back burner. But there's more to the story. So here is a whole season, the whole system production. And the good news is there is no significant difference between the short season corn plus the whole system production. So because we do expect to really see the short season corn produced normally, if we put this black bar on top of this green line, we're in business and we've confirmed our hypothesis. So there's no stats run on this full season corn. These are from the hybrid trials in the next field over. I think what we've really seen this year is a worst case scenario. It was the second or third driest summer in our state's history. And if you start to look into what was going on with the decomposition in the field, you get a better sense of what happened. So I wanted an insurance policy on this project because it didn't work out so well in 2015. So we went in and we put in decomposition bags for each of these different crops to pull throughout the summer. So 4 bags per species for 8 different collection dates. We started with 100 grams of fresh tissue, and we put these in between the corn rows where they could decompose on the surface. So for starting characteristics, I was a little surprised to see triticale with the highest carbon to nitrogen ratio. They all are well outside of that 24-to-1 ratio we want to see for a bacterial decomposition pathway. So we know that we're going into fungal decomposition. No significant differences in biomass returned in about those 4 inches of stubble, but a substantial amount regardless across the field. And while the nitrogen returned is significantly different, it's arguably not significant in terms of the field perspective, so we're not really going to talk about that much more. Briefly, collection times after, in terms of weeks after harvest from that cash crop cover crop, these are the decomposition bags in between the corn. You can see even our herbicide wasn't particularly effective this year, and this is a close-up view of the decomposition bags. So here's the real bread and butter. The top dotted lines are decomposition over time by species. Triticale does decompose significantly slower. And then these bottom lines here are our corn growth over time. So at different vegetative stages throughout the summer, we went out and harvested 2 plants from these zero nitrogen crops to determine biomass accumulation over time. And this is an incredibly solid trend, at least in my opinion. This is the triticale decomposition. It's the slowest. It also has the highest carbon to nitrogen ratio. And here are our triticale plots growing across the summer. They're the slowest as well. This is rye and wheat neck and neck for decomposition all summer. Here are our rye and wheat corn growth plots, also neck and neck for decomposition all summer. And then here are our control corn growth plots, where we're seeing about 20% consistently faster growth throughout the season. So this suggests to me that we might have really had a nitrogen tie-up issue in this system, where our plants, even with PS&T, were just not getting the nitrogen that we had put out for them. And at the end of the season, we're seeing still only 60 to 80% decomposition, which is low. We wouldn't expect to see that. And I really think that our lack of rain exacerbated this situation and the slow decomposition. So in conclusion, the good news is cover crops do yield very well, and we know how to turn those into a cash crop. The field management is imperative. We have to start talking about it like a cash crop and treating it like one in order for it to perform like one, and we have to be on top of our corn management and planting as well. The system is very promising. If we can see the yields that our literature suggests that we should be seeing, we are in shape to see the whole system out-yield conventional full-season corn systems alone. We do have early adopters who, before this has even come to conclusion, are already planting this. One grower was supposed to try it on an acre for an on-farm trial, and he decided to put it on 45. So he likes me. We'll see if he likes me at the end of next summer when his corn comes in. I'm hoping he does. We are going to run relative feed value and milk value on this whole system. I do still need to run CSNT. I think the last piece of the puzzle is going to be in there. And we do plan to run a thorough economic analysis as well as a risk assessment on our proposed system. And in case I haven't mentioned it, I could really use some rain next year. So with that, I do want to take the time to thank Northeast SARE, who funds this project, as well as my eternally patient PI, Dr. Masood Hashemi. And with that, I'll take any questions if we have time.
Unfortunately, we're running a couple of minutes okay. Behind, so no questions. But if you guys do have questions for Sam, I'm sure she'll be happy to entertain
them. I'll be here. Thank you.